Technorama episode 632, remastered in 4K. Hey, welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Thank you for joining us. If you are returning, thank you for joining us again. Joining me right across the virtual table is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Hey, I'm doing good. Doing really good. I feel spring in the air. It's just starting to show up. It's coming.
There's a spring in my step. There's a spring in my bed. There's a spring. Never mind.
When I walk the dog in the morning, I can hear birds and I'm like, okay, it's coming. It's still cold, but it's coming.
What's this cold of which you speak?
It's been like, I heard Dave Slusher describe it as Seattle weather. It's been cold and rainy.
Okay.
For the last couple months, it's been like lots of days of rain, very few days, you know, it's just nothing. But it's cold. So it's I know you've dealt with much more cold weather than I have. So I won't bore you with it too much.
They're having a pretty mild winter in the Midwest too, again. So, I mean, there was a very cold snap when we had that polar vortex that chilled out Texas and everything. I mean, the Midwest was very cold as well. They had a couple of storms, but in general, by this time of year, they should have some serious snowbanks in Michigan and Wisconsin, and they don't. There's just a lot of grass showing through.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting that it dipped down and hit Texas and stuff, but huh. Well, what's the coldest you ever had in Wisconsin that you can recall?
About 40 below and minus Fahrenheit, I guess 40 below is 40 below Celsius too. And then there was about another 30 degrees off of that with the wind chill. I mean, it was minus 70.
Did you even leave the house?
Yes. Yes. Those were the days where I would wear the full length Carhartt overalls to work.
Oh.
Yeah. Don't mess around with that cold, because all it takes is like, you go to work and your battery stalls and now you're stranded in the cold. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah. No, you don't screw about that.
I used to work at this place. It was a summer job and he had a cooler that went 40 below. He had this polymer stuff that he would freeze and we would break it up with a wedge kind of thing. Anyway, so I went, you know, it's in the summer. I go and walk in there and I could feel your nose hairs go.
Mm-hmm. It stings the nose. It's so cold.
Yeah. I know what it's like in the conditions of a cooler, but not, I mean, I can walk out in the summer, but not have to live in it.
You know, they could have stored all the COVID vaccines.
Yeah, they could.
For a week. That wouldn't have worked. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. We have a little bit of feedback for you from, we didn't have a show last week because Saturday, we went kind of on a family ski trip, got back a little late, so I pushed the karaoke into Sunday, and we pushed Technorama, off the calendar.
Off the cliff.
Craig said, hey, do you want to record Monday? And I've got a standing call with some friends on the first Monday of every month. So sorry we couldn't make it, but the good news is Patreon people don't have to pay for that one.
Right.
Let's...
And you didn't have to pay for it with your time. So how about that?
Oh, it was a train wreck of a karaoke show from a technical standpoint because I was streaming and it locked up hard twice. So Wirecast did a patch that week and I installed that. And last night, fingers crossed, went pretty well.
Okay.
Well, good. Except for the on-screen talent, of course.
Right. Well, that's a whole other story.
Yeah, we won't get into that.
Day.
Reach
right over one out.
Those letters. I love those letters.
Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy.
Mailman. Mail today.
All right. Our question of the week 2 weeks ago was, what common product has a feature you're not sure? What?
Wrong one.
Again?
What movie prop would you
Where are you looking? Money? Why does it say in the show notes?
Hey, refresh your show notes. That's not right. I got links in there.
I'm looking at a live document here, dude. It's Google Docs.
So when you click on Technorama.
Yeah, but I'm reading question of the week. What common product has a feature? I know we read that one. Man, we can't pay for good help around here.
Look, I'm telling you, I clicked on the link.
Before you click on the link, what does it say on the screen? Right under feedback.
Oh.
That yeah. I just had to hear the O.
I was like, oh, that. You're looking at that.
No, that's where I read while I'm clicking.
Okay, so what movie prop would you give real money to have in real life?
Like an old married couple here.
Yeah.
John Miller Jr. says,
by the way,
John Miller Jr. says, Iron Man suits from the Iron Man movies. Yes, right. All of them. Awesome. Mike Robeson says, Highlander sword or the vehicle from Damnation Alley or possibly the glaive from Crawl. Oh, that must be that spinny thing that they throw around.
Yep, it was. His ninja star. Let's see. John Kratzer says the DeLorean from Back to the Future. That's a pretty easy one.
Or how about, what would you do if you had one of the vehicles from Mad Max? You couldn't really drive that down the road. Pull into the parking lot at the grocery store.
You know, police pull you over. Hey,
flamethrowers.
Is this thing roadworthy?
Street legal?
Street legal.
For the streets of tomorrow, it is.
Do you feel this vehicle is safe for highway travel?
Steve London says, oh, easy. The golf club that Jack O'Neill uses in the Groundhog Day episode of SG-1 with him hitting, with him and Teal, they hit golf balls into the event horizon of the Stargate. Oh, my gosh. I fell off my chair laughing when I saw that part of that episode.
That is funny. You had a couple, I had one. Oh, John Will Jr. of course said, Iron Man suits, but like, earlier. And then Gary Lindra said the Maltese Falcon
or the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah. The Maltese Millennium Falcon.
Eric Miller says the man from Uncle Guns from the TV series. That is a cool looking gun.
It is. And it's got everything on it.
Lone Guy's Night says,
look, it's got an extended clip, a shoulder brace, and extended barrel, and a scope.
It's a whole bunch of things added onto a pistol.
Yes.
I didn't even see the pistol in there at first.
If you look at it from me, you go, oh, looks like somebody just set a pistol on some pipe and piece parts. It's funny.
All righty. Did you have anything in your profile to add to that?
Just Gary Lindros and the Maltese Falcon.
All right. I think that's it. We will get you another question at the end of the show. So thank you. Thank you. Another letter from our listener, Dave. And history time.
All right.
On this day in history for March 10th, 2021, this is the 69th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 296 days remaining in 2021. It was on this date in 1876 that the first successful test of a telephone was made by Alexander Graham Bell, of course.
Yeah, and 130 years ago today, Almond Strauger patented the Strauger switch, a device which led to the automation of the telephone circuit switching.
Well, good thing, because Alexander had been at it for 15 years before good old Almond showed up. I'm getting too many phone calls.
Yeah.
Route them to my voicemail. It was on this date in 1977. We jumped from 130 years ago to 1977. Astronomers discovered the rings of Uranus.
Yes, and also on March 10th. 2000, a dot-com bubble peaked with the NASDAQ Composite Stock Index Market Index reaching 5,048,062 cents.
You know what it is today? Units. It's over 12,000 today.
It's over 12,000.
Yeah. On March 10th, 2006, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter arrived on Mars.
And the World Health Organization officially announces the COVID-19 outbreak as a pandemic on this date in 2020. Wow, that's history.
It is.
We're still living it.
Yes, we are. I'm supposed to say who? The World Health Organization.
Too soon. Who? Yeah, who? It's too soon. No,
old joke. Sorry. All right. Happy birthday goes out in the state to German-Dutch alchemist and chemist Johann Rudolf Glauber, born on this date in 1604.
And Alfred Peet, Dutch-American businessman, founded Peet's Coffee and Tea, was born on that same date in 1920.
You know, I never even thought about that being somebody's name when I passed those places.
It's like, you're thinking Peet Moss or something? Or
I don't know. Maybe it was, you know, Starbuck wasn't named after somebody named Starbuck.
Was it?
No. Not? American okay. physicist and academic Nobel Prize laureate Val Logston Fitch. Oh, he was American, so I don't need an accent.
So, okay.
He was born on this date in 1923.
And also born on that same date in 1956, English actor, producer, and screenwriter Robert Llewellyn.
Llewellyn. Do you know what he's known for?
Llewellyn?
I had to look. I'm like, this sounds really familiar. So I went and looked.
That was Andy's girlfriend on Andy Griffith Show.
He was not the judge or the bailiff on the People's Court. That was Doug Llewellyn.
Yeah, Doug Llewellyn.
That was the first thing I thought of. No, Robert Llewellyn was on Red Dwarf.
Oh, okay.
Little British cult sci-fi show. Go check it out. I think you can get it on Google Play.
Oh, wait. That was Barney's girlfriend.
What? Llewellyn. That was Sue Ellen.
Sue Ellen? Yeah.
No, Mary... Thelma Lou. It was Thelma Lou. Not Thelma even Lou. Close. Me and Thelma Lou are going to go out to Mount Pilot.
That was the Andy's... Waltons.
Wow. Just stop. Mary Ellen was the oldest the Walton girl.
No.
American actress and producer Sharon Stone is 63 today.
And born March 10th, 1961, American captain, physician, and astronaut Laurel Clark.
Oh, man. We just lost somebody off of YouTube from this segment. I'm not listening to this garbage. Listener birthdays. We're going to include last week's birthday since we weren't on here. March 7th, Ben Maddox, a.k.a. Captain Rootbeer. Also on the 7th, Caleb from Dancing with Elephants. He's probably 30 now, for all we know.
Right. He's got his own business and everything. Yeah.
Grandparents. March 8th is Ali Zane Youssef, a.k.a. Super Al 1394. We should call him Firewire.
BJ, say, he's a standard.
BJ Kiefer is also on the 8th. The 11th has a couple of birthdays. Andy Helsby and Ken Kitzman. I really need to learn to slow down. Yeah. Johanna Gonzalez, a.k.a. Mighty Joe, is on the 13th. The 14th. Don't forget, people. Put it on your calendar. March 14th, Pie Day. You so should be
have a piece of pie.
You should be able to remember that. Michelle Lopez, a.k.a. Country Shines. We haven't heard from her in a long time, but we wish her all the happiest of birthdays on the 16th. And if it is your birthday and we didn't get you, well, happy birthday to you. And if you really want to be part of the fun, let me get to Wirecast titles. Birthday. There we go. ChuckChat.com/wiki or ChuckChat.com/birthday. Get your name on there. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. Some people even put their kids and their spouses and their friends, dogs, neighbor. It's up to you what you want to put on there. We'll give you a shout out regardless. I think I even have one in there for my old dead iPod.
Yeah, you do. It comes up every once in a while.
Look forward to seeing you on that. All right, before the band can get out of here, we're going to boot them out of here. Hit abort on that. And that means it's finally time for the news. How are we doing on time? Oh, we are just cruising through this show.
All right.
Having a blast.
Yeah, everybody's got a sigh of relief. Oh, they'll be done soon.
And they're listening on double speed.
Yeah, that's right.
News and weather, everyone.
Well, it's kind of like weather. Why don't you take the first story?
Yeah, and this was kind of interesting. You know, the Mars rover just landed, Perseverance landed just a couple weeks ago, and everybody saw the picture of the parachute. Well, there's a story behind that parachute. And the huge parachute used by NASA's Perseverance rover to land on Mars contained a secret message. Thanks to a puzzle lover on the spacecraft team.
Yes. Do tell. So, do tell. I heard this. I was listening to Tech Stuff with Jonathan Strickland.
Okay. Oh, crap. He beat us to it.
Well, of course. The the wheels also have that Morse code message. I think they say JPL. The parachute had a message. There was some other message on this thing that was encoded. But tell about the parachute.
Okay. So systems engineer Ian Clark used a binary code to spell out dare mighty things in the orange and white stripes of the 70-foot or 21-meter, you know, for you European folk, parachute. He also included the GPS coordinates for the mission's headquarters at the GPL, the GPL in Pasadena, California. So if you had no idea, you can go directly there by putting them in your Google Maps. So Clark, a crossword hobbyist, came up with the idea 2 years ago. Engineers wanted an unusual pattern for the nylon fabric to know that the parachute was oriented during descent. During turning it into a secret message was super fun, he said Tuesday. Only about six people knew about the encoded message before Thursday's landing. According to Clark, they waited until the parachute images came back before putting out a teaser during the televised news conference on Monday. Yeah, it would be weird going, hey, there's a secret met, and the parachutes all pushed together.
Collapsed.
That wouldn't have been good. It said it just took a few hours for space fans to figure it out, Clark said. Next time, he noted, we'll have to be a little more creative. And he was twisting his mustache when he said that. So dare mighty things is a line from President Theodore Roosevelt's is a mantra at JPL that adorns many of the center's walls. The trick was trying to come up with a way to encode it, but not making it too obvious. So that's really cool, because I thought, oh, that's an interesting pattern, and just dismiss it. I didn't realize there was actually a message in there.
I'm going to take the next one, and I'm going to do a screen share for you on this. We don't do too many screen shares here, but this one warrants this because it is straight out of Harry Potter. This is kind of fun. Let me do find desktop 2. There we are. Oh, you know what? Can I get the whole screen? I don't know if I can do that.
Is this the other part of the the Perseverance?
No, this is...
Oh, well, real quick, I just before you get there, I did I added another article in there because there's probably like 100 Easter eggs on
this. This is the AI one.
Okay, so on Perseverance, there is another plaque. Okay. Speaking of secret messages, there's a plaque that looks like the evolution of man, but it's with it's actually the rovers that's landed on Mars.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, but it just looks that way because it went from small, medium, larger. But yeah, it's like a family photo of all the rovers, and that's on a little plaque that's on Perseverance.
So check this out. I'm sharing my screen. Sorry about the technical details in the background. They're using AI to take some of these old still pictures. This is Amelia Earhart, and the picture turns. It blinks. This is like straight out of Harry Potter, you know, wall of portraits thing. In fact, that's what they say. It says artificial intelligence can now, I apologize for those that are listening on the audio podcast, but please go to the show notes for episode 632 and click through our second story in the news about AI and pictures. Artificial intelligence can now transform photos of people into short, highly realistic animations, much like the moving pictures in the newspapers and posters of Harry Potter's magical world. All of these in these AI animated clips, faces that were once frozen in time blink their heads and even smile, their movements wavering between astonishing, lifelike, and deeply unsettling, and yes, downright creepy. Genealogy website MyHeritage introduced the animation engine on February 25th, developed by the technology company DID and known as Deep Nostalgia. It enables users to animate photos via MyHeritage website, representatives said in a blog post. Wow, so you could take like your family pictures and go, oh, man, Grandpa moves. He hasn't moved in decades. If you're watching, check out Marie Curie. She looks kind of creeped out.
Now, did you try this at all?
I have not.
I did.
I don't have any straight on facial shots of people that I could upload.
I didn't. You don't have to. It didn't have to be straight on.
Charles Darwin does not look like John Shuck, the actor. I mean, John Shuck could pull off a Charles Darwin.
Sure.
I think it's fabulous that we evolved from apes.
Yeah.
That was my attempt at a John Shuck impersonation.
So I uploaded two photos.
Of?
One was a high school picture of myself at the prom. I had a perm. It was on a dare, but I had a perm, and I cut out just that part, and I uploaded it. And yeah, it actually, I don't know if you have to be the judge to know if it looks like me, but my eyes were moving and it was doing just like that. And I took a picture of my grandfather and put it up there, and that looked pretty close. I think
that's what I would like to do is take.
Like, yeah.
But the pictures I have are like, they're sitting on a chair. They're not really head on, face on.
It doesn't have to be head on.
And they're somewhat small in the background, but.
So the picture I had of my grandfather readily available was, it was at the time, the family.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of, you know, there a couple of people were holding their newborn baby, and he's looking down at what looks like a cake. So he's kind of like at an angle.
Yeah.
And I put it on there just to see, and it was, he was kind of just moving, looking in that direction, but it was moving.
And then everyone said, well, you go like this.
Yeah.
Give you this creepy right. little fast glance and grin. Like, geez. Oh. Ah.
Yeah. But yeah. It did not have to be straight on. Okay. I'm sure it makes more sense to have a picture, like a portrait kind of picture, but yeah, it worked. I actually was thinking.
I do have some portraits of my grandmother when she was probably in her 20s. Oh, that might be interesting. Yeah. Or my dearly departed sister who died in 1982.
Why don't you load up Patrick Stewart?
All right. Somebody must have Google searched me because I told them on the Star Trek thing. I said, I got to go. Got to make a podcast. They looked up Chuck Tomasi and podcast. This might be where they got. So, hey, thanks for joining us. If you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, thank you. We are doing Technorama podcast here. This is our live stream of an audio podcast that we will put out in a couple of days. So we were on the Star Trek crew. Well, Craig was on 3 and 4, and I'll be joining again on 5 with my lovely wife. Next news story we have here. Oh,
yes.
Speaking of Star Trek, that was a nice accidental segue. We had this planned out.
I thought you were actually teeing it up. Okay.
Yes, I was.
Okay.
That's how this podcast go. Everything is an accident.
Right. So warp drive is no longer science fiction. The physics of faster than light travel are actually coming to a starship near you.
Read on, says the skeptic.
That's right. So Einstein's theory of general relativity puts speed limit on all matter in the universe, creating a barrier preventing acceleration from below to above the speed of light. However, an independent group of scientists, inventors, and engineers called Applied Physics recently proposed the first model for a physical warp drive, according to a recent study published in the peer-reviewed journal Classic and Quantum Gravity. I bet that is a fascinating journal.
way above our heads.
Yeah, just a little bit. So while this could make warp drive more than science fiction, it's best to take the new study with a grain of salt, because even if warp drive is now mathematically possible, then there's no telling how long it'll take until humans could use it to substantially shorten the time of travel between stars, the closest of which would take roughly 4 years to reach at light speed.
But you can't go the speed of light, but warp will let you go faster than the speed of light. Oh, man, this is giving me hurdy brain already.
Well, wasn't warp drive actually folding space? And
Yes, it was. Don't forget, you're going to need some Heisenberg compensators.
Yeah.
So you have to watch a lot of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, so in the middle of the paper, it was like, doo-la-la, doo-la-la, ignore the details.
And always reverse the polarity, but never put on the red shirt.
That's right.
Sorry, had to throw that in there somewhere.
Yeah, so I'll read just a little bit more here. So Applied Physics has announced the first model of the physical warp drive after getting choked up just thinking about it. After working on a close contact with esteemed researchers in the warp field mechanics. Wow, somebody's even in the warp field mechanics. field already, with endorsements from renowned theoretical physicist.
Here we go.
What?
The name.
Alcubierre.
Huckleberry.
Yeah, I said Alcubierre. Miguel Alcubierre, whose warp drive engine model served as a basis for this research. So many of the people in the field of science are aware of Alcubierre's drive and believe that warp drives are unphysical because they need because of the need for negative energy, said Axley Brobick.
Antimatter? Would negative energy be antimatter?
Well, yeah, wouldn't it? Yeah. So scientists and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, I won't read all the details, but you can go read them for yourself. And there's a whole, they even got a video on there on this article talking about it.
A video of somebody going faster than light.
Yeah. I went. I'm done back.
That's not how this works. Not how any of this works. All right. I don't have any audio segments or things lined up for the break, so we're going to soldier on through. So,
all right.
There. Bonus time. Axe Strange Stories. The Ready Model 100 is a Raspberry Pi enclosure for cyberpunk enthusiasts. And if we go over to Engadget.com, they tell us that thanks to their diminutive size and low power consumption, single board computers like the Raspberry Pi can come in all shapes and sizes. We've seen DIY enthusiasts like Guy DuPont put a $10 Raspberry Pi Zero W into the shell of a 2004 iPod Classic to create a device that can access Spotify. We covered that on this show.
Yes, we did.
But few are as cool as the recent Kickstarter project we spotted from a Toronto-based company called Ready Computer Corporation. It's Ready exclamation. Not Ready question mark.
Ready.
Well, I think the, it was an Arduino. I think it was an Arduino Nano that was in the smart glasses. Was it not? The sunglasses that the guy in, was it Gilbert?
Made?
Yeah. The kid in Gilbert made.
That was a long time ago. I don't remember. Yeah. Something like that. Yes. I think it was.
Okay. The company's Ready Model 100, essentially a case for your single board computer that includes a mechanical keyboard, stereo speakers, a touchscreen display, and enough I/O ports to connect almost anything you need. The enclosure allows you to fit in an SBC that's about the size of a 4x4 Intel NUC board. Oh, and you can carry it around with a guitar strap, which makes you look cool for having a nerd thing. Let's see. Basically, it allows you to build the cyber deck of your dreams. The Ready Model 100 comes in two main SKUs. There's a bare bones Pro model, priced at about $237, I'm assuming US, that will ship without an SBC. What's an SBC?
I'm not sure what they're referring to.
I don't know either. But this thing's got like antenna ports and inputs. And okay.
It says it will ship without an SBC or keyboard. I'm not sure if that's related. I don't know. Maybe the screen.
Meanwhile, the $395 Neo model includes everything you need to start using the device out of the box. You can also buy the Neo without an SBC if you already have one lying around. If I have an SBC lying around here, someone better tell me about it. Better call the exterminator or something.
I've seen that your office. There's a lot of stuff in there. I don't know.
For those that are really ambitious, there's an $1,100 deluxe model that comes with the 4x4 Ryzen board, 16 gig of RAM, and 512 gig SSD. I wanted something I could easily repair or upgrade, and I was inspired by vintage machines of the 1980s. Ready Model 100 creator Jesse LaFleur told Engadget when we asked him about his inspiration for the project, "I've launched this Kickstarter to find other like-minded folk who either want a machine that they can upgrade for years to come or just liked my design. With 6 days to go, the project has raised $97,377, oh, Canadian, and that's about $25 US. It's about halfway to its goal. So very cool.
It may already be there because we have, this is an article from a couple weeks ago.
Oh, certainly, certainly.
And by the way, the SBC is referring to the board. And so the Raspberry Pi or any of the alternatives.
Single board computer. That's my guess.
Yep. That's right.
Not a standard brain cancer.
Man, this looks like something I would have dreamed of in an alternative 1980s universe.
This looks like a 1980s universe thing. I mean, it's got, when you had one of everything on your, when every port, it's got a big one of these and a little one of those and two of these and three serial ports.
Well, if you count the USB.
But you can't use COM 1 and 3 at the same time.
Yeah. They use the same IRQ, so you can't do that.
You got to move the jumper.
Yeah.
Jumpers. No, remember configuring computers with jumpers.
Oh, God. Actually, I like the jumpers instead of more than I did the switches.
Dip switches. Oh. Or the original IBM async serial card where you set it to COM1 or COM2 by pulling out a dip package that had four contacts, two of which were cut. And if you flipped it around, you were on COM1 and it was just.
That was funny.
Yeah. Nice. One of those things where you're pulling it out and you poke your fingers every time, like putting in memory chips.
I'm surprised, you know, my fingertips are intact. How many times I've rolled over a memory chip and stuck the legs in my,
You pick up your finger and the memory chip is stuck in the tip of your finger.
I was one of those guys that never used a chip inserter. You know, I had one, but I never really used it because you had to go, you know, put the chip in and then line it. I was like, I'd rather just put the slide it over.
You see that motherboard behind me?
Yes.
From the K Pro 4 that we took apart in 2015?
Yes.
Well, remember we took out the Z80 processor and we took out the two EEPROMs. No. No, they weren't even EEPROMs. They weren't E squares. They had the little window in there. So you had to put them in the infrared microwave oven to erase them. Well, just I took those out.
They were not EEPROMs.
They were just PROMs. Right. And they were sitting just under my monitor for years. Well, I finally put them back in. Only you can't see it on camera, but if you were to look close,
blood.
The two PROMs are not all the way in. They're
Yeah.
The legs are sort of sticking out. Oh. Like if you banged on the wall, they might both fall out.
Wow. That's a little out of practice, huh?
I just don't want to poke my fingers one more time at my age. You know, if you wanted to kill half of the IT population in the 80s, you probably could have laced the tips with poison.
Yeah. Oh, no, I got to go get another tetanus shot.
Right. How'd you die? Installing memory.
Yeah, installing memory.
Doing a 512K upgrade.
Yeah, right. That's funny. Oh, this is a cool little device, though. I wonder what you would really use it for. Since, I mean, I've got a tablet over there. It's, you know,
I'm trying to figure out what I would do with this thing. And if I was going to spend $1,100 on the deluxe model, what do you do with it? You didn't really give a good use case for this. What problem does this solve?
Well, you know, for a long time, the Tandy Model 100s, you know, it would look similar in design, where it was as a keyboard and with the LCD screen all kind of built in. A lot of people were using this for a long time because one, it would run on AA batteries, and journalists could use it in the field and type up a story on it.
Yeah.
And then phone it in. You could, because it had a modem in it. That was useful, but of course you can do that on your phone nowadays. So I don't even know why. Other than just doing it, you know, I can appreciate somebody doing this though.
So I think we told the story of one of my most interesting tech visits when I was a repair guy at the Computerland store back in the 80s, where I went out to the Grand Island in Munising, Michigan. And the guy was on the lighthouse that was like a couple hundred feet above the water. And all you could see was in front of you was, about 130 miles of Lake Superior.
Right.
And I repaired his compact power supply on the compact portable because those things were notorious for breaking. I was just talking to Scott Reynolds yesterday. I said, how many power supplies did we replace on those things? Must have been a lot because we always had one in stock. Anyway,
Yeah.
My dad sent me an article a couple of weeks ago. They had a write-up of this guy. He has been living there for something like close to 60 years now. It's ridiculous.
At the lighthouse?
Yes.
Okay.
And I remembered he was from MIT, and he would spend his, I mean, his family, this place has been in his family for something like 130 years.
Wow.
Wow. I mean, it was one of those things like my dad sees this article in the paper, goes, "Hey, I thought you might want to read this because you did that one service call out there one time."
Yeah.
Good memory.
Was that the guy you knew? You worked for? You did repaired his computer?
Yeah. Same guy.
Oh, okay.
I didn't realize. I thought he'd been there, you know, maybe two or three summers as just like a lark. No, man. Yeah. He's like, this is his place.
That's funny. I just watched the movie The Lighthouse. I don't know if you've seen it.
No.
That didn't end well. I hope he's having a better time than those guys.
Oh, yeah. This guy and his wife, they're terrific. I should pay him a visit and go, "You see what happens 30 some odd years later."
"I came back to fix your computer again."
"Are you still using that compact portable?" Jeez,
how's that
buddy?
Power supply holding out?
"Here, have a MacBook Pro."
he probably went over to the shore and went, "Run." Chucked it out in the water.
Yeah, that's eco-friendly.
Yeah, oh. Yeah, that would be like a shot put, wouldn't it? That thing? That thing was heavy.
Anyway, shall we do the Remember When?
Why not?
Let's move on. Yeah. Okay, in the Remember When segment, you want the first story? Because you're a Knight Rider fan.
Yes, and I'm going to pull this up right now.
Take it away.
So this is more of a video, but I'll read the article that goes along with this. So
I love watching you do the shot put thing on the other screen with the delayed reaction. Now I get to watch it again in 30 seconds. Yeah. Thanks.
So movie and TV shows have helped introduce millions to the automobile. However, after the curtain closes on a production wraps, the iconic vehicles are often stored away, sold, or destroyed, leaving hardcore fans to play detective and tracking them down. A group of Knight Riders historians, there's two plurals in there, have been searching for the show's on-screen stars. Recently, found the Flag mobile unit, a GMC General Semi, and Kit's mobile garage, abandoned in Idaho. If you remember, that's the big semi that they would drive in.
And yeah,
they go get repairs and whatnot. Of course, it did look a lot bigger on the inside than it did.
It was a TARDIS.
Yeah, it was a TARDIS. So it took the organization years to track it down, obtaining an outdated mainframe from Vista Group, a company that provided vehicles to TV and movie studios. According to the video, not even professional data recovery services could help retrieve the mainframe data because it was so old.
They had to bring it to the Computer History Museum in Mountain View. They can fix anything.
They could probably have replacement parts there. But anyway, on the machine was year information, make, model, VINs, all that stuff for all those movie cars, and what movie productions the vehicles appeared in. However, after some unconventional workarounds, the group obtained nearly all of the data, including that of the GMC General that appeared in Knight Rider and other productions. So the detective work helped find the owner in the late 2019. The group made an unannounced visit to the owner who had parked it. It racked up 230,000 miles, hauling produce after its 15 minutes of fame was up.
Oh, like so many actors.
Yeah, he washed out. And
hauling produce.
What? Yeah. They're going to do like the VH1. Let's find him now.
The general today?
So they, after a close inspection, they found the VIN was matching one on the mainframe. And a studio tag sticker was similar to tags found on the on-screen Knight Rider vehicle. On vehicles, the other cars, you know, the tags were similar.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like on the dash and stuff. Knight Rider historians found the cab painted blue, missing its fake sleeper. There was a sleeper cabin that was fake, made it look bigger on the show, I guess. I lost my part. Through black paint was they found black paint underneath. The organization is now searching for the truck's trailer, which was last known existed in the mid 2000s. Tracking it down seems like it would be a bigger challenge. I imagine you wouldn't have a VIN. I don't know if you have a VIN for that or not.
There's got to be some kind of identification for the trailer.
Yeah. So it was an interesting video to watch, and they do get to it and they show the video. It looks nothing like the show because the steering wheel's got like electric tape on it, and you know, it's terrible, but they bought it from the guy and they're going to restore it.
So last weekend I was sorting through some pictures because I have a Friday task to go and catalog any new pictures, and I put the select ones into a Google photo folder called Photo Frame.
Right.
And then my Chromecast or Picture Frame or whatever will roll through that in a random fashion. Well, I came across one from the year 2000. I'm almost done cataloging all of my pictures.
Oh, so you know where the trailer is?
No.
You got a picture of the trailer?
Oh. We were on board the Disney, is it the Miracle? Magic, their cruise ship. We were taking the girls on their first cruise back in 2000. All right. And I took a picture of the Carnival. There was another ship docked where we were. And I said, oh, it's a Carnival ship. So I zoomed in and it's the Carnival Fantasy. Now, I remember when the Fantasy was a big ship. Right. And it doesn't look big anymore. So I said, oh, wait a minute. That was in 2000. Let's do a little history. I just completely went down this rabbit hole. But it's the thing about finding the trailer reminded me, because it may have been trashed by this point. It could have been recycled.
Oh,
and,
yeah. Who knows?
And I did a little research. I said, oh, because shortly after we went on the Carnival Celebration in 93, a friend of ours from work went on the Fantasy. And we went, wow, that ship is so much bigger. And it was launched in 91, 92. It was still pretty new. So even in 2000, when we saw it, it was in good shape. I said, where is it now? Went onto Wikipedia, and it's in this shipyard in Turkey being dismantled. In fact, it says it's scheduled to be dismantled in February 21. Oh, that is so sad.
Like, yeah.
Can we buy it?
You buy it. Oh, hey, Donna.
Oh, the guy who started Carnival Cruise Lines bought the Jubilee, the Holiday? Mm-hmm. He bought one of those ships for $1. He started that whole company off of buying a ship for $1. Now, obviously, if you bought a ship today, it would cost probably more than $1 and
a bunch of dollars.
Well, you'd have to pay for the dock space and the maintenance and.
You know, oh, yeah.
It's there would be an investment. So and this is not the time you would want to start a cruise company. Although, not a bad time to invest in some of these depressed stocks like airlines and cruises. So
things are turning around slowly. So,
hey. We'll talk about that on the Patreon show. I've got.
Oh, will we now? Okay.
I've got a topic for you. Bit of a rant, but it's some good news that is light at the end of the tunnel. All right. Next story in Remember When. Wow, we got three Remember Whens. I'm going to have our time remembering all of this. Hey. Okay. Buck Rogers has been one of the most enduring science fiction classics in American history since its debut in Amazing Stories, Volume 3, Number 5, in 1928. Wow. Gil Gerard looks good for his age, doesn't he?
He wasn't the original Buck Rogers.
He was on TV.
He was.
But from those pulp origins, it spread to become a popular favorite across media, including comic strips, film, television, and much more. The internet. Web things. Legendary artist Frank Frazetta created 8 Buck Rogers covers for the long-running comic book series Famous Funnies in 1953 and 54, whose publisher infamously rejected a 9th cover for being too violent. This became the cover of Weird Science Fantasy number 29 from EC Comics in 1955, which have become highly influential in their own right. 6 of the Frazetta Buck Rogers cover issues are available today in today's session of the Sunday and Monday Comics Animation, Video Games, and Art Weekly online auction. That just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
No, I need to work on that name.
It's actually, let me clarify that. It's Sunday and Monday Comics Animation, Video Games, and Art Weekly online auction 122108.
Oh, okay. That clears it up.
As recently discussed, Buck Rogers was a formative influence on figures ranging from Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry to Superman creators Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. But the combination of Frazetta and Buck Rogers had a special magic of its own, according to Star Wars creator George Lucas. Let me read this quote to you real quick. When George Lucas came out to visit, he told me that my famous Funnies covers had been one of the inspirations for Star Wars, Frazetta relates, which I thought was a pretty sweet thing to say. Fans were disappointed when they learned Frank had turned down Lucas's offer to paint the cover for a Star Wars novelization, and mystified when his advertisements for a derivative Battlestar Galactica began to appear in a weekly TV guide. The simple answer, Frazetta explains, is that I got to paint what I wanted, and I retained my originals and my copyrights. Take that, George.
Right.
I wouldn't have been able to keep either if I had taken the Star Wars job, and I would have not had as much of a creative freedom. That would have been a step backward for me. So,
Well, I would argue that Ralph McQuarrie did a fantastic job with some of the concept art for Star Wars and
all
this stuff. So I don't think it was a loss, but, it sounds like everybody won. Ralph got a job. Frank kept his art, and George Lucas went to the bank with it all.
So, yeah. Who won? Who really won?
Yeah. I included this not just because of the Star Wars, but I love Frank Frazetta's art, especially his fantasy art. I've been fascinated by that for years. So if you're not familiar with it, just go search for Frank Frazetta and Google images, and you'll see a bunch of really cool stuff. You've seen it before, haven't you?
Yes. Yes.
It looks like a lot of D&D kind of fantasy art, with orcs and people scantily clad, but they're fighting, and the whole visual of the way he draws somebody, a body in action, like he's telling a story, and it's fascinating.
All right, one more Remember When story for us.
All right, let me click the link. So scientists find a way to read a sealed letter 300 years ago. It was sealed 300 years ago. They opened it virtually. Let me zoom this in a little bit so I can read it. So, I zoomed in and I went past the first paragraph. 300 years ago, before envelopes, passwords, and security codes, writers were often struggling to keep thoughts, cares, and dreams expressed in their letters private. One popular way was a technique called letter locking, intricately folding a flat sheet of paper to become its own envelope.
I heard about this. This was on, Jonathan may have covered this also. This is really familiar. I just heard about this on another podcast, but go ahead.
Hey,
this is our version.
Have access to our show notes.
I think so. He's tapped into it. We did share a Google Doc with him once, so I think
that was his in. So one popular way was to use a technique called letter locking, intricately folding a flat sheet of paper to become its own envelope. The security strategy presented a challenge when 577 locked letters delivered to The Hague in the Netherlands between 1689 and 1706 were found in a trunk of undelivered mail.
So the thing about letter locking you got to realize is you can't open it without destroying, like tearing part of the letter. It's kind of like a wax seal. Some of you may be familiar with, they drip wax and they use a signet or a stamp of some type to secure it. And if the wax seal is broken, somebody opened it and read your letter. And if it was resealed,
you can assume somebody did.
Right. Yeah. And the letter locking is the folding. And the folding is actually part of the charm of the history of this letter that they want to protect. Well, these things are sealed up, but now they have a way to read them.
Yes, it's kind of fascinating. I think I remember somebody giving me something like this in high school that they folded up and you have to kind of tear it to open it
up. Was it like a crane origami thing?
No, it was like kind of like this, but that I remember. No. So the letters never reached their final recipients, and conservators didn't want to open and damage them. Instead, a team found a way to read one of the letters without breaking its seal and unfolding it in any way. Using a highly sensitive X-ray scanner and computer algorithms, researchers virtually unfolded the unopened letter.
That's pretty darn cool.
Yeah. So the I'll get through a little bit of this. So the algorithm takes us right into the heart of the locked letter. Sometimes the past resists scrutiny. So we could simply have cut these letters open, but instead we took the time to study them for their hidden, secret, and inaccessible qualities and words, I might add. We've learned that letters can be a lot more revealing than when they are left unopened. Okay. So anyway, there's a little more to it, and they go into what the letter said.
Well, they have a sample of what one of them said too. Dear sir and cousin, it has been a few weeks since I wrote to you in order to ask you to have drawn up for me a legalized excerpt of the death of Sir Daniel Lepere, which took place in The Hague in the month of December 1695. Holy smokes! This is either a really late letter or a really old letter.
Well, it was never delivered.
Okay. Well, they better get on that. Without hearing from me. Well, it's no reason he didn't hear from me. This thing got lost and it's locked in a trunk.
Yeah.
You've been hacked, buddy. This is F.G. I'm assuming that's a profanity they edited out for this.
I'm writing
to you a second time, which didn't go through, in order to remind. Wow, there was a relationship that really went awry here on this because of this.
Yeah.
Someone's been stealing your mail, buddy. Second time, to remind you of the pains that I took on your behalf. It is important to me to have this extract. You will do me a great pleasure to procure it for me to send me at the same time news of your health, of all your family, all the family. Okay, well... This dude really had a falling out.
Go past the picture. It's just one little more quote.
Oh. I also pray that God maintains you in his sainted graces and covers you with the blessings necessary to your salvation. Nothing more from the time being, except that I pray you to believe that I am completely, sir and cousin, your most humble and very obedient service, Jacques Sinoc.
Okay. I think that's a fake name.
It is me, Black Jacques Chirac. Okay.
So that's pretty cool. I like the way they wrote, and there's the picture of the letter kind of splayed out.
They wrote such cool letters. Not like today.
Now they can
man.
They can go back and scan the Shroud of Turin, and we can all talk about that more.
I think they already unfolded that.
Yeah, it was locked.
All right. And was that it for the history? Yes. No. Yes.
Yeah.
That was it. Remember okay. Then we go on to the patrons. We are running a little long, so I'm going to have to make an audible on this one. And when we get to pass me the remote, you can choose one of three. So start thinking and we'll spread the others around for the next couple of shows. All right. Thank you, patrons, because we don't want to do this show without giving you a huge thank you. You are the people that help finance this show to the nth degree. This show is really brought to you by you. We've got upgrades that happen. We've got hosting costs to deal with. And it's light. It's the people that are generous with their dollar a show or sometimes more, like Alexis Duran and Amber Elstad and Amy Bowen, who is watching. She made a comment just a little while ago.
Yep.
Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC, Dandy Mancoyer, thank you very much, Danny Mortensen, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, John Noble, and Jorga Schrauen, thank you very much, Christina and Kyle Nishioka, thank you, Leon and Mark and Mike and Chris and Saturday and Steven, who names their kids Saturday? Well, I guess the Addams family called their daughter Wednesday.
Grandpa Choco does.
There's Wednesday on the Addams family. So, and Friday was with Robinson Crusoe. All right. Anyway, Stephen Weshy, Steve Therian, Steve Cody, and Steve London. Thank you very much to all of you. If you are so inclined, we would appreciate it greatly. If you like this show, you find humor, you find value, you might even learn something from these crazy news stories that we've got about Knight Rider and viruses and who knows what else is happening out there.
The Model 100.
Patreon.com/Technorama podcast is where you can go and help finance this show, because it doesn't happen for free anymore. It hasn't for a while, but thanks to you, we have been in the black. We have been paying the bills for what, the last 4 or 5 years?
And yeah, we are coming that, up we would on skip out. Yeah, before that, we would skip out before they bring the bill to the dinner table.
Right. We were getting a lot of triple pass due notice. We're going to cut off your hosting thing. But no, you've saved us from the brink of oblivion. And we're coming up on 15, 16 years of doing this show.
Man. Yes, I was just thinking about that again today.
Wow. I was on a Clubhouse chat for some old timers and went, okay, got y'all.
Yeah, right. That's right.
They were actually calling it the OG Podcasters from anybody who started in 2005 or 6. And I went, a little bit before you, but that'll work. All right, let's bring down the Imperial March Band and pass the remote here. And now the news at 6 with Craig Stepp.
Yeah.
All right, you get to pick one because we're going to have to move along. We're running late.
Actually, I'm going to talk about one. I'm just going to say I did watch Coming to America.
Okay.
The sequel to Coming to America and from the 80s.
I thought that was coming out in the theaters.
No, it's on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
And it was fun. I wouldn't say it was a great movie, but I would say it was fun to watch because I like Arsenio Hall and Eddie Murphy and the whole cast. It was fun. So go check that out.
Friday I was I went to get some labs done at the local lab where they draw your blood and whatnot. And they had this TV on there and there was a scroller on the bottom and it said Coming to America. The producer, the directors, the writers, they said, we felt we owed it to Eddie Murphy. Like, what? That sounds really pathetic when you think about it.
Yeah, right. So anyway, it's on Amazon Prime. It wasn't a bad movie. I wouldn't say it was. I liked the first one much better. I Care a Lot, which is supposed to be a mystery kind of thriller on Netflix with Peter Dinklage. Mm-hmm. He was all the actors were fantastic. Peter Dinklage is awesome. He can say so much without even speaking. Just his facial expressions. I love that guy, but it was a pretty good movie. I think the middle part was awesome. The end was kind of, I don't know. I wasn't thrilled with the way it ended. Anyway, the one I'll talk about a little bit more was Crime Scene, The Vanishing at the Cecil Hotel.
I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I thought you
saw that. I watched it and I can't remember what you said. That's why I put it back in here.
So now we get your review.
Yes.
For the listener that remembers my review. What did you think?
It was four episodes.
It was three episodes
too long.
That's exactly what I said.
That's what I thought you said. I was even Kim and I, the two episodes, they kept rehashing everything.
Well, it wasn't so much rehash, it just felt out of order. It's like,
well, they would re-say what they said in the previous one. They were stretching
it
out.
And as soon as they got the body, it's like, and what did the coroner say? And what did the coroner say? Exactly. Tune in two more episodes to find out what the coroner said. It's like, oh, for crying out loud. That's not the way it goes.
And actually, Kim called it, on the second episode. She goes, I think I know what happened.
Well, Donna remembered this from the news story. She goes, I'm not going to ruin it for those of you who didn't see it. But she goes, is this a story where blah, 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 blah? I'm like, you remember that? And then, they like two episodes later, they say, and the body was found, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay. Yeah. She called that one.
Well, what bugged me about the whole thing was, not the whole thing.
They kept making it out. When you watch the preview, it made it out like this was going to be a lot of things that happened at the Cecil Hotel, and a lot of bad things did happen, but
there were a lot of things that happened there. Yeah.
Right. But they didn't cover any of that really. They just kind of used it as, this is a place where a lot of bad things happened. So here's
this would have been a better documentary about the hotel.
Yeah.
And maybe touched on this one and this one and this one and
they,
this one.
They could have made four different stories out of these four episodes rather than stretching the one story across all four of these.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're going to, if you feel compelled to watch it, watch the first episode and go straight to the fourth one.
Pretty much. Yeah. It's a true crime story. So if you like,
what bugged me was all of the web sleuths that they were talking about, and they kept coming up with these conspiracy theories. And after a while they kept coming up with weirder ones. I'm like, where's this coming from? And then they tried to nail that rock star guy.
Morbid?
Something like that.
Yeah. He was a victim just as much as the lady who got killed. So, I mean, the web sleuths really did him damage. So they were well intended. They wanted to get to the bottom of this, but they were following leads without all of the facts. And that can be so damaging. So,
well, that kind of highlights the social media justice, you know, where people try to try a case or try somebody
or think an election is fixed. And it's like, no, you have absolutely no basis for that other than what one other person said. Yeah. So it's like.
So anyway, that would be a negative review on the crime scene.
Yeah, I wasn't totally pleased with it either. It had the potential to be so much more. And it was an interesting story at its heart, but it was just not produced well.
Oh, there was some stuff like the video of the elevator. I had me for a minute. I was like, yeah, what is going on here? I was paying attention really hard. And
right.
It was weird. But then people took it to the nth degree, and it was. And when they started staying in the hotel, the YouTubers, I was like, what are we watching here? So anyway.
Yeah. Or it was pretty, when you found out like the couple in the UK that was staying there and why the tap water was brown.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That was a bit like, oh, that'll give you the heebie-jeebies.
You know, go watch I Care a Lot on Netflix.
Okay. Yeah. Much better. You know what? We are over an hour.
Okay.
What do you say we just leave the media corner for the show notes?
Skip to the end.
Apologies. Our question of the week that we're going to leave you with is, the last thing you Googled is what kills you. So how did you die?
Restaurants.
Which could be true right now. I honestly don't know. What was the last thing that I Googled? How do you know what the last thing you Googled is?
Oh, I just put my mouse in the
you click the on the box. Is that actually in historical order?
I don't know. Maybe. Just
oh, you know what? It's Chrome is also pulling off of the URL. So because you can put a search term into the address bar on Chrome.
Yes.
Looks like I died from Star Trek Enterprise.
I think a lot of people did right in the beginning
but
of the show.
It was a close call between that. The next one is birthday. And right after that is friendly Brazilian greeting.
I had restaurants, finance, and ServiceNow stock.
You died from ServiceNow stock. That's not good, Craig.
No, it's not good.
Please, people, tell us what you died from in your Google search. This is actually funnier than I thought. Thank you, everybody who's watching on YouTube and Facebook. I think I may have missed an occasional prompt here or there. I got the birthday. I got the Patreon. I didn't get the Patreon. We'll give you one more chance. Let's go Wirecast, Patreon. If you want to be a Patreon member, patreon.com/Technorama Podcast. It's on the video for those watching video. If you didn't catch that in the audio, just rewind 10 seconds and play it again. Thanks. And we are out of here, which means we play that and we bring that down. Thank you again, Craig, for doing all the story research. You are a web sleuth in your own right.
Oh, no. Okay, thanks.
Without bringing down a death metal artist.
Right. Poor guy.
You want to get in touch with us? You can call us on the listener line, 707-530-2428. Oh, I can still run these buttons even while I'm talking. This is like chewing gum and riding a bike at the same time. Email us, technorama@chuckchat.com, or just go to chuckchat.com/technorama, and you'll find all that information. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Craig. And
thank you, Chuck.
How do we end this show again? It's been 2 weeks. Oh, yeah. Yes. Tell a friend about Technorama, and Craig's going to give you a binary high five as our famous sign-off.
All right. 101, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
See ya.